Tonight on the Daily Debrief, Gypsy Blanchard takes the stand and testifies for the boyfriend on trial for murdering her abusive mother.
She controlled every aspect of my life. Hitting, punching, starvation.
But did the testimony backfire for the defense?
He decided what the weapon would be.
Plus, the jury now has the case of a deadly stop sign stabbing incident. And trouble for a New Jersey couple who became famous for helping a homeless man. That's straight ahead on the Daily Debrief for Thursday, November 15th.
And good evening, everybody. Welcome to the Debrief. The prosecution, of course, has rested, and the defense now has the case of a man accused of traveling to southern Missouri, murdering his online girlfriend's mother, and then fleeing the state. Nicholas Godejean is facing first-degree murder charges in a Springfield courtroom. Prosecutors want to send him to prison for life, but first, they have to secure a conviction. Under Missouri law, prosecutors need to prove the crime was knowingly committed after a period of deliberation or thought. Here, the defendant confessed to both. He said he wanted his girlfriend's mother dead, and he traveled to Missouri from his home near Milwaukee, Wisconsin, to commit the crime. The victim, this defendant, confessed to stabbing was Claudine Blanchard. She went by the nickname Dee Dee and died in 2015 at age 48. The victim's daughter, Gypsy Blanchard, was dating the defendant. She was in on it and pleaded guilty to second-degree murder. She's serving a soft 10-year sentence because her mother had abused her for years. Gypsy Blanchard took the stand today, and her testimony tops the debrief tonight. Former federal prosecutor Lisa Wells is on the debrief tonight to analyze the testimony of Gypsy Blanchard. But first, let's go straight to that testimony. Gypsy was the defense's first witness in this case. Here she describes the abuse she suffered at the hands of her mother. The mother suffered from a mental health condition, which resulted in the mother subjecting Gypsy to unnecessary medical treatments.
She controlled every aspect of my life. She smashed my computer and my cell phone. She chained me to a bed for 2 weeks.
Why were you in a wheelchair in June of 2015?
Because my mother forced me to be in one.
What illnesses did you believe you had?
Cancer, muscular dystrophy. I needed glasses. I needed hearing aids. Seizure disorder, and I can't remember what else.
Did you and your mother obtain any kind of advantage by you being in a wheelchair?
Yes, sir.
What kind of advantage did you obtain?
Financial, attention, charity.
What did your mother say about your ability to date going forward?
She said that it would never happen, that she would never allow it.
Says she tried to run away, but that just made her mother abuse her more. And she explained why she felt she was out of options.
Did you receive any other physical abuse as a result of running away other than what you already told the jury?
Yes.
What other abuse?
Hitting, punching, starvation.
Why not just tell somebody rather than kill your mother? Why was that not an option?
I truly didn't believe that nobody believe me if I told anyone. My mother had legal documents in place saying that I was incompetent, and I thought that meant that if I went to anyone, the police, or told anyone, she would just have them convinced that I was making everything up.
That is why Gypsy Blanchard says she and her boyfriend, the defendant, turned to murder.
At some point after you initially considered killing your mother, did you ever change your mind?
Yes.
Do you know when that was?
About 2 weeks before it happened.
Why did you change your mind and decide not to kill her?
I started having doubts, second thoughts.
Did you ever then change your mind back to the initial decision to kill her?
Yes.
Why did you change your mind back to killing her?
My mother and I got into an argument 2 days prior to the murder occurring. And Nick asked me, are we still doing this? Am I still, coming there to do this? Yes or no? And I said yes.
Who talked you into killing your mother?
I did. I talked him into it.
Former federal prosecutor Lisa Wells is here tonight on the Daily Debrief. Lisa, good evening. Good to see you. Okay, this is extraordinary testimony. What did you make of this when you heard it the first time around?
It's awful. I mean, this child has lived as a victim her whole life, and she just felt helpless, obviously, out of options, knowing or feeling, and maybe it's true that people wouldn't believe her. She, you know, clearly, and never having any normalcy in her life, it's very understandable that she would feel that that would be her only option. She's very sympathetic, incredibly.
You know, I have to ask this question, though. How is this relevant to whether this defendant committed this crime, first-degree murder, knowingly and after a period of deliberation? That is what the law requires. How is this relevant to that?
Well, the problem is we all know that it is knowing. I should want to say we all know it, but they're making a good case for the fact that he knows what he's doing and he's of average intelligence, at least, and there was extensive deliberation. I think that if you focus on the sympathy factor, then it may lessen the sentence. It may mitigate the sentence. It's not going to... I don't believe it's possible they can find him not guilty. Just not possible.
You know, it makes me wonder procedurally why this didn't come up in the sentencing phase. But look, let's move back to that testimony from Gypsy Blanchard herself. She said she knew about her boyfriend's diagnosis on the autism spectrum and still pushed forward.
Did you and Nick ever talk about any disabilities he may have?
Yes.
What disabilities did you understand him to have?
Asperger's syndrome.
Did you even know what that was?
No, sir.
Now, you indicated that you paid for this trip to Missouri by Nick in 2015. What all did you pay for?
I paid for the Greyhound bus ticket. I paid for the hotel and for eating money.
And how did you pay for this? How did you get the money so that to Nick?
I stole the money from my mother, and I sent it to him via the mail.
In what form was the money?
Cash.
Do you know how much you sent him that time?
I don't know the exact amount, probably about $800.
Well, she sent Nicholas Godejean the money, and then Gypsy Blanchard said she procured the tools necessary to commit the crime.
Did Nick have a knife that was used in the murder?
I supplied the knife.
Where did you get the knife?
I stole it from Walmart.
And why did you steal it from Walmart?
Because I didn't see a knife that was sufficient enough in our own home.
There was also some gloves that have been introduced into evidence.
Yes.
Where did Nick get the gloves?
I supplied them.
And where did you get the gloves?
They were already in our house.
How did Nick know when to do this crime, time-wise, that morning?
I told him.
Who planned this murder?
I did.
Did Nick do any of the planning in this murder?
He may have had one or two.
Do you know what plans he provided?
He decided what the weapon would be.
Had you discussed alternative methods of killing your mother?
Yes.
What other alternatives had you considered?
Poison, arson, a gun.
Why did you not consider poison?
It was too hard to find an odorless, tasteless poison.
Why didn't you kill your mother?
I didn't believe I could do it.
Could you explain what you mean by that?
I don't like blood. I don't like the sight of blood. Frankly, I'm too squeamish, so I just honestly didn't believe I could do it on my own.
Lisa Wells now. She says she's too squeamish. Big deal. Here's what I'm zeroing in on here, Lisa. The girlfriend is a defense witness, but she just said that the defendant decided what the weapon would be, and he traveled from Wisconsin, to Missouri to take part in this. The state has to prove deliberation, and basically, she just helped the state prove it. She's a defense witness.
obviously.
The best thing I think that could have been done is if he could have negotiated a sentence similar to hers, because he's in a very difficult situation. He's confessed. I mean, he's already confessed. So, you know, and then, of course, she gets up. I mean, she's not really saying anything really that hasn't already been acknowledged by him, I believe. So, I mean, to some degree, you know, I don't think she's making his case worse. She's basically saying, I'm the one who thought of all of this. I'm the one who supplied him with the gloves, the duct tape, the time to do it, the door ajar, the knife, the money for the bus, the money for the hotel. I did all of that. So she's basically saying, this was my idea, and I needed him.
She's trying to take fault because she can't be tried again for it. But look, right. She also pointed the finger at him. Let's go back to the testimony now. Gypsy Blanchard next told jurors how she planned to flee to Wisconsin with the defendant. She also talked about the Facebook post which triggered the murder investigation.
What were your plans going forward? What did you plan on doing?
Just staying with him and living forever there.
Give any thought to possibly the police locating you? Did that ever occur to you?
No, sir.
What did you think would happen to you?
Thought maybe that if people knew that I was gone, they would just think I was missing. And missing people go, you know, unfound all the time. So I just thought I'd remain a missing person.
Now, there was a Facebook post made about this case. Do you know what I'm talking about?
Yes, sir.
Do you know where that Facebook post was made, on whose account?
Yes, sir.
Whose account?
My mother's.
What did the Facebook post say, if you can recall exactly, or close to it?
That bitch is dead.
Was there a comment in the post as well about the daughter?
Yes, sir.
What was that comment?
I don't remember exactly how it was worded, but something to the fact of, I raped her sweet, innocent daughter. Her laugh was so fucking loud.
Who made that post?
I did.
Did you make that post pretending to be somebody else?
Yes.
And who were you pretending to be?
Nick.
And why would you make that post claiming to be Nick?
I wanted her to be found. I wanted the cops to find her body.
Straight into cross-examination of this witness now. Prosecutors were very curious about the so-called alter egos that the defendant discussed with his co-defendant, Gypsy Blanchard.
You were asked a little bit about, during your relationship, that these alter egos that the defendant and you came up with. You remember that?
Yes, sir.
It was the defendant who first introduced you to that idea of alter egos.
Yes, sir.
And he actually first told you about his alter ego, Victor. You recall that?
Yes, sir.
And Victor was a vampire that was 500 years old.
Yes, sir.
And you decided to come up with your alter egos just to kind of please him.
Yes, sir.
And also, as part of this fantasy, you also started to kind of consider yourselves as master and slave, correct?
Yes, sir.
And the defendant was the master.
Yes, sir.
And you were the slave.
Yes, sir.
And at one point, he had sent you basically like a bill of sale kind of ownership papers. Do you remember that?
Yes, sir.
And those papers would basically mean that the defendant owned you.
Yes, sir.
Made it seem like it was the defendant who was in charge here. Look, let's listen to the next witness. Up next, a doctor who diagnosed the defendant.
To a reasonable degree of psychological certainty, what did you diagnose Mr. Bodajan with?
Autism spectrum disorder, level 2.
Anything else that you added to that?
No.
Anything about support?
Requiring substantial support with accompanying intellectual impairment.
And was that part of your diagnosis?
Yes.
What does that mean, requiring substantial support with accompanying intellectual impairment?
It's a specifier in the DSM-5. It means that he requires substantial support in order to be able to function adequately. He needs supervision and he needs structure, or he could pose a danger to himself or others.
Self or others. Back to Lisa Wells for that one. Lisa, the last word from the defense's own doctor there, he could pose a danger. That could cut a couple different ways. That could make it seem like he's a dangerous guy that jurors want to lock up, but he also could be easily influenced.
Right. Yeah. I think that's a very, that one was, is a risky one, because that's what you, I think that you would not want to do, is pose someone like him as a potentially dangerous human being, more of someone who could be easily manipulated. But now it's out there. I don't think that's very helpful, honestly. I don't really like it, but he has to report, I guess, what he finds. And the bottom line is that could cut, I think, badly for him.
It's interesting. This is a defense witness. Look, Lisa, we'll check in with you again at the end of the broadcast here. Still ahead tonight on The Debrief. The case of a deadly stop sign stabbing in Florida is in the hands of jurors. Maybe also you recall this New Jersey couple who became a sensation for raising money online for a homeless man. Well, that plan appears to have backfired legally yet again. More on that when we return here on The Debrief. Welcome back to The Debrief, folks. Time now for a check of other incidents making headlines across the country with Anthony Velez.
Here are today's top crime stories trending along crime.com and across the country. A former NFL player is under arrest after he allegedly threatened someone with a sword at a youth basketball event last month. 42-year-old John Charlie Rogers Jr., who played 5 seasons in the NFL, turned himself into authorities in New Jersey after he allegedly threatened a person with a sword during a meeting for a youth basketball team at Matawan Aberdeen Middle School on October 5th. According to authorities, Rogers was reportedly under the influence of drugs or alcohol at the time of the incident. Rogers is now charged with making terroristic threats, stalking, and weapons offenses.
Just fire! Jesus!
Authorities in Arkansas released dashcam footage of a crazy shootout between a suspect and deputy. Video shows Corporal Brett Thompson attempting to pull over a driver for a traffic violation, but the driver, 29-year-old Luis Cobos Sinobio, refused to go down without a fight, leaning out of his vehicle and firing shots at the deputy.
Shots fired, County.
No officers were injured in the shootout, and Cobos Sinobio suffered a wound to the left shoulder before eventually being apprehended. He now faces multiple criminal counts, including 4 counts of attempted capital murder. The homeless man who accused the New Jersey couple of mismanaging nearly $400,000 they raised for him on GoFundMe is now accused of conspiring with the couple to scam the public. The feel-good story began with the homeless man, Johnny Bobbitt, giving Caitlin McClure $20 after she was stranded on Interstate 95 in Philadelphia in 2017. To thank his kindness, McClure and her boyfriend, Mark D'Amico, started a GoFundMe page for Bobbitt, which raked in over $400,000. Bobbitt alleged the couple used the funds as a personal piggy bank and sued them after only receiving $200,000 of the funds. Now all 3 suspects are charged with conspiracy and theft by deception. Those were today's top crime stories. I'm Anthony Velez for the Daily Debrief.
To Florida now, where defendant Armando Baptista is facing manslaughter charges in what's been described as a road rage stabbing incident. Victim Fakhreddin Knight went by the nickname Mohammed. He was on his way home from a party with his girlfriend, Wendy Gambolis, when he lost his life. Defendants Armando Baptista and the next defendant, Demetrius Elder, were stopped at that stop sign. When Knight pulled up, the first car containing the defendants would not move. Knight honked his horn, but still nothing. What happened next is a big he said, she said, but it resulted in Knight being stabbed and killed. Closing arguments in this case came today, and the jury remains deliberating as we speak. Prosecutors say the defendant suffered only 2 injuries. In other words, the evidence doesn't line up with the defendant's story.
Bruises, no cuts, no scrapes, no defensive wounds. You heard from the medical examiner, Dr. Boyka. Defensive wounds are defined as wounds on the extremities. Wounds where you are trying to protect yourself. Your major organs. Those are defensive wounds. Yep. We get a cut on the head, which, ladies and gentlemen, I submit to you, was impossible to happen because he had a hat on, because we have that hat. And that hat has no tears, holes, anything like that in it. That these were concocted after the fact.
And the defense pushed back at that claim by making self-defense the centerpiece of its argument. The defense attorney started by calling the night of the attack the most terrifying in his client's entire life.
Armando is sitting in the passenger seat of that car. He is heading home to his wife and kids. When his door opens and a 6'2", 228-pound stranger comes into the car and starts beating on him. The stranger gets a bottle, hits Armando over the head a couple of times, and the bottle breaks. The stranger then has the neck of the bottle in his hand, and he's using the neck of that bottle to try to stab Armando. Armando is screaming, "Help! Help! Who is this, G? Who is this? Please stop." But no one can help him. Demetrius is in the driver's seat of that car. He's obviously ineffective from where he is. He can't reach over to where this stranger is attacking Armando. Armando is trapped.
to former prosecutor Lisa Wells. Lisa, a couple sides to this. The defendant says, I was attacked. The state says the evidence doesn't support that. The evidence is that you attacked someone else.
Well, you know, what are you supposed to do if someone comes at you? Wait until you're very injured? How injured are you supposed to be before you're allowed to defend yourself? I don't think that the prosecution's tactic of saying there's no wounds on the deceased is that strong. On the
This is exactly why the first case resulted in a conviction, but only on the lesser charges. We've got to wrap up. Lisa, appreciate your time tonight.
Thank you.
That's all the time we've got for the debrief tonight. A reminder that Law and Crime will be monitoring the Baptista deliberations and will be live in the Go to John case tomorrow.
We'll be right back.